This is Derek Bros.
Derek Bros.
Derek Bros.
This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance.
I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important you are.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network, and today is Saturday, June 17, 2021, and I hope you're having a good Saturday, a good weekend. I just wanted to do a short video this weekend, talk about solitude for a few moments. Before we get into that, I do want to remind you guys that my website is theconsciousresistance.com. Theconsciousresistance.com is the home for all of my content. I've got upcoming videos and articles in the next days that are going to remind you about the insanity that we are hearing. Domestic extremism, calls for censoring your text messages, or, you know, censoring more and more people on Facebook, going after disinformation. Guys, if you're following me on Facebook, Twitter, I'm not on YouTube. If you're following me Facebook or Twitter, you really need to follow me elsewhere, because my time there is probably short, just like it was short on YouTube. All of these platforms right here on the front homepage of theconsciousresistance.com tell you where you can follow me, my text list on Hive, Minds, Float, BitChute, Odyssey. You can support me on Patreon. You can follow my podcast version on Pinecast or Spotify, DLive, Telegram, Rockfin. I mean, there literally are a dozen different options for you to follow me other than Facebook and Twitter. So when I'm gone, when I'm deleted off those platforms, just know that I haven't stopped producing work. It's just that you chose not to follow me elsewhere, and you won't see me anymore. But so today's talk is going to be a continuation of a talk that I did last Friday, and I'm going to try to do these every Friday or Saturday. These are going to focus more on some of my favorite topics relating to spirituality and philosophy. Last week, the episode was on healing the inner child. Healing the inner child. And thanks to everybody who reached out. I got a really great response from folks at all the different platforms I'm on, and people emailed me and were just sharing their stories of everything that they have gone through as far as healing their inner child. And it was very much appreciated. So last week, Healing the Inner Child was from this book, my first, second, and third book, which were re-released at the beginning or the end of 2020. I think the end of 2020, the Conscious Resistance Trilogy, which you can buy online. Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon if you have to. You can buy it other places if you want to. This is a collection of my first three books, which I co-wrote with my friend John Vibes. And so together they're called the Conscious Resistance Trilogy. And every weekend from here on out, Friday and Saturday, until we're through this whole book, I'm going to be picking just some of my favorite chapters from each of the three books in here. Last week's chapter on Inner Child was chapter 5 of the first book, Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality. And today's chapter is on solitude and spending time alone. And that is from chapter 8 of this book. You can see if you can see some of the table of contents. It is 300 pages, just under 300 pages, 270 pages. It's not that difficult to read. And I honestly think this is my most important work that I've done at all. My book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State, has been better selling more recently over the years, but I honestly think that this is my most important piece of work. And that's why I'm highlighting this. I'm hoping that by focusing on it, you guys will start to recognize the importance of what's been put in here. This is what the Conscious Resistance is all about. This is everything I need to say on that. So today we'll be talking about chapter 8. Again, solitude. And I'll go ahead and link you. Actually, if you're watching right now, you check the show notes below the video. You can see a link to the actual chapter. I did put it into a written version on our website if you want to get that preview. And I called it Lessons Gained Through Solitude. I'm showing that on screen right now for those who are watching the screen. Lessons Gained Through Solitude. In the book, the chapter is actually called Rites of Vigil in Solitude, and we'll talk more about that. So you can go ahead and find that link if you just want to read it for yourself once I'm done talking about it. But let me just tell you a little bit about why I thought it was important to include this in the book and why I think it's important to talk about this today. You know, we're all, as I was saying last week, like, we're dealing with so many insane situations. I touched on briefly the calls for censorship, push for domestic extremism, and that's just in the United States. I'm not mentioning wars, revolutions, civil wars, protests, fight against vaccine passports, all the different things happening all over the world. You know, we are a global, international, collective human family. And so I try not to just consider what people that I know and love are dealing with in the US, but also I live in Mexico. There's things going on here in Mexico. So wherever you live, wherever, whatever you are facing at the moment or choosing to ignore, the reality is that we have some tough situations ahead of us. And maybe this has always been the human condition. Maybe no matter what, you know, circumstances were, no matter what level of technology we were existing at, whether, you know, if we were just nomadic people like some of our ancestors traveling, well, then our work was, how do we find food? How do we find shelter, right? And now maybe it's easier to find food and shelter for some of us, but we have other concerns, other stresses, and other things to handle and to deal with. So no matter where you're at, what you're dealing with, it's going to be important for you to be tuned into yourself. And that's why last week I was talking about the inner child. The more you work on your inner child, the more you heal from those wounds and those traumas that might exist. Well, how do you do that? How do you start the healing process, right? I had some people email me and say, hey, you know, I've tried to look deep, and like either people were like, oh, I have nothing wrong. There's nothing like that bothers me. There's nothing in my inner child. Or some people said, you know, I started doing that work and there's a lot to do. There's like a lot of trauma and stuff, right? But at the end of the day, if you don't allow yourself the space to the quiet space and time to sit there and, you know, journal, I love to journal. I've got several journals and notebooks starting over again after having most of my journals stolen from me recently. But for me, journaling and writing is a huge way to still my mind, to get all this running thoughts here in my head, because I've got thoughts about the work I need to do and debating with people on Twitter and arguing about this and what new projects am I going to do and how am I feeling and what's my relationship going on? Am I hungry? Just everything, right? And all that stuff. And it, to me, it's like this chaotic cloud, and I have to be able to kind of grab the important things and put them down on paper and really look at them so that I can reflect on them and understand them better. So being alone often allows me the space to do that. And I love being around other people. I mean, I am very much, I think, an extroverted introvert. I like to be around people, but I also value my privacy and my alone time, because I know that as much as I value I get from conversating and, you know, even this conversation with you guys, this interaction, I also just like being by myself. And I'm going to share two different stories, two different times in my life that I've experienced solitude. And this is what the chapter in the book talks about. This is the only chapter in, out of the entire three books, the entire trilogy, again, the Conscious Resistance Trilogy, that is only written by me. The words in this chapter are just mine exclusively, because it was just how it worked out. The rest of them were co-written by myself and John. So the first time that I really experienced solitude, well, I think probably, you know, obviously there's been times I've been alone just growing up generally, right? But I mean, like truly solitude where I couldn't distract myself, right? Before 2005, 2008, you know, before smartphones and the internet, whatever you think it is now, we were distracting ourselves with video games and TV and whatever. And people are still doing that, right? But that's what I was doing. If I wanted to distract myself, then I would just go play with my friends. I would go watch TV. I would, you know, I'd do something to not feel what I wanted to feel, right? And it was easy to avoid things. And then, of course, with the internet, it's more easy than ever to just pick up a cell phone, to pick up the computer, and to just get lost in whatever you want to get lost in. And that's fun. And you can gain a lot of knowledge sometimes or waste a lot of time. But it also can be a way to avoid things. And so it's important to find these spaces of solitude. And so I was probably avoiding things in my child. I definitely was. And in my teenage years, by the time I got into my teenage years, by the time I got 18, graduated early from high school, I started drinking all the time. That drinking all the time turned into just being the guy, like doing 20 beer bongs a night and puking everywhere, then doing 20 shots of tequila and running around naked and just, you know, just acting a fool. But I found something. I don't remember, you know, I thought there was some sort of wisdom in, you know, alcoholism or just being the crazy drunk guy. And then it wasn't long before I was using Xanax all the time, and I was just barred out, passing out, blacking out, waking up places, waking up with a new girlfriend, waking up just like all kinds of stuff, you know, for that was a period of time. And then, you know, using other drugs, and it was just like the cycle. So my point was, I grew up avoiding things and not really knowing how to deal with them and process my emotions because I didn't give myself that quiet time, because nobody ever told me, hey, Derek, you know you've been through a lot of crazy shit as a young kid. You're going to need to deal with that because it's going to stay with you for your whole life. And maybe we should talk with you through it. You know, my parents did the best they could, of course, but you know, I don't think there was any of that real understanding. And for me, we need to talk to the inner child and kids, our children, our nieces and nephews, as people, as adults, don't treat them like babies. And if they're going through trauma, you know, I think it's fair to let them know, like, hey, there might be some difficult things you face in your life. Some of the decisions you make, you might chase and look for love and try to find it in alcohol or drugs or sex or whatever. But really, you just need to work on your daddy issues. Like, maybe somebody should have said that, right? So drugs was just another way for me to avoid things. So my point here is, after doing that at the end of high school for a couple of years, I ended up getting arrested. I ended up hooked on crystal meth and selling drugs when I was 20 years old. And from January till November, was just in this crazy whirlwind. I got sober, was still dealing drugs, and then I got locked up. I got locked up in November 2005, a week before I turned 21 years old. And that was the beginning of my journey in and out of prison over the next 2 to 3 years. Between 2005 and 2008, I would end up doing 18 months behind bars. I did 10, 11 months and then out and then back and then out and back. And, you know, I ended up with a felony. But it was when I was locked up, that was the first time I think I ever truly felt like alone. Like, I felt alone in the world before that emotionally. I was depressed and dealing with all that. That's why I was chasing drugs and sex and alcohol. But I think that was the first time I've truly felt powerless. Because now my reflection, hindsight, right? Like, looking back, I remember thinking, man, even when I got locked up, I thought, okay, I'm going to take care of this. I've never been in major trouble. I just got caught with drugs, but I think I can probably just sign up for probation. I can get out and my parents won't even know what happened. And then I can just go out and buy some more drugs and then make some money and pay this off. And then, like, yeah, I can still just, you know, I was still trying to think of, like, how do I keep moving forward in this direction I'm going? I didn't even think that maybe this was everything's about to change. And when I did get locked up, and my mom and my family, they tried to get an attorney to see, like, if they would let me out, if I could go to outpatient rehab. But the judge was like, no, he needs to sit. He needs to go to our program. And so they literally wouldn't let me out. So a month after I'd been already in jail, I was still kind of holding on to hopes that I was going to get out. And then once I got word that this wasn't going to happen, I felt alone. There was, like, I'm on the phone talking to my mom. My mom's like, yeah, the judge said no. And, you know, my mom's crying because this is my mom. She's like, you know, wants me to be safe. She's all worried, and she's recognizing she's powerless, that she can't do anything about it, right? And then I had to tell my girlfriend at the time, like, hey, I thought I was getting out, but I'm not getting out. And then I had to sit there, like, in jail. I remember, like, celebrating my 21st birthday locked up, and somebody's, like, giving me some, like, jailhouse hooch, as they call it, some jailhouse alcohol that they'd been fermenting in the locker or something. And it was, like, maybe just a tiny cup like that. But I remember just, like, hey, I'm drinking alcohol on my 21st birthday, locked up. But it was really this feeling of, like, wow, I can't do anything. Like, I can sit here and cry on this phone if I want. I can punch in the walls and scream. I can get in a fight with the cops if I want. I can, you know, ask my mom, get a new attorney, try, you know, again, or just whatever. I could keep fighting it. But I had to really recognize, like, there's nothing I can do. My girlfriend, my mom, my lawyer, myself, nobody can help me. I'm here and this is my reality. And, you know, that was a feeling of powerlessness that I hadn't probably ever felt before. And I had to accept it. You know, I had to accept that, like, looking on the calendar, I got arrested in November. This would probably be, to turn December. My birthday is December 1st. So probably by December 2005, I'm looking at the calendar, and the earliest that I would be going home is likely September or October of the next year. And that was just like, holy crap. Like, how do I even, you know, and I can't even imagine people who are doing real hard time, like Ross Ulbricht and others who've got, like, life sentences and 5, 10, 25, you know, it's just, it sucks. But even just looking at and seeing, like, that months of my life were now gone. My friends were out there. The people I cared about were going to be out there, and they were going to move on. Maybe they would forget about me, right? And it was a really scary feeling in that solitude and that, you know, that powerlessness. But I had to really dig in and say, okay, like, this is, I'm here. Like, I could see around me. There was, like, I was 21. I could see 50-year-old dudes, 60-year-old dudes. I could see some dudes younger than me. Like, I could see that. And my father's been in and out of prison my entire life. I was still very angry at him at this point. And I could just see, like, wow, this is the future. Like, if I don't figure out why the hell I'm here and do something different, then, like, yeah, I am going to be one of those guys, like, that's just going to be in here forever, like my dad. Like, I need to really figure this out. And that's when I really started journaling. I mean, in that space, that quiet space, I started journaling a lot, started writing down my thoughts. And maybe I'll even just read a quick section from the book on this, because I think it's relevant. So I'll just read this quick section, if you guys don't mind. So the only choice I had was to sit, be with myself, and take moments to consider how I found myself in that predicament. I spent the next year and a half writing pages and pages of notes, stream of consciousness rants, and ideas on how to take my life in a better direction. A family member began sending me Buddhist literature, and I started to meditate. My grandma started to send me books on Buddhism and Christianity because she was, it does consider herself to be a Christian. So they kind of sent me like Christian Buddhist books, and it was interesting, but it was my first introduction to specifically to Zen Buddhism, Zazen, sitting meditation. And I started meditating while I was locked up. This was the beginning of a major life change for me. The steps I took in those days have directly led to my present space. And while I wrote mountains of manifestations, I began to notice my handwriting becoming slower, more precise. As my thoughts slowed down and reflection became the norm, my physical world started to reflect the internal changes. Learning to meditate in an environment filled with false ego and posturing was not an easy task. I persisted and I found many moments of peace despite being physically caged. And, you know, what I mean by that is that when you're locked up in jail, like there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of pain, and people, especially the dudes. I mean, obviously I wasn't housed with the women, so I wouldn't know, but the guys are just so full of like false bravado and trying to be tough. And some people are coming from gangs or just from real like tough lives, you know, and everybody's coming from different places. And it was a real ego check. Like I thought I knew some shit, you know, when I was at 20 years old, and getting locked up helped me see like, wow, I don't know shit about the world. I haven't been through half the things some of these people have been through. And, you know, it also, I got to learn from other people's experiences, and it was just, I can honestly say I met some really wonderful people there, and I'm not in touch with most of them anymore. Some of them have died. Some of them, you know, moved on and figured their shit out before me. Others are still locked up and going in and out of that system, unfortunately. But I really started to just go internal and do that work. And that's that work that I talked about last week, the inner child, right? Because I had this space. Now, this was the space that was forced on me. This wasn't me like living out here in the, this is why I think in some way I kind of had an advantage, right? Because when you're in jail, yeah, it sucks. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You get told when to eat, when to go to sleep, when, you know, you have to shit and piss and shower around a bunch of people. Like, it's not cool. The only potential upside, if you choose to, because this is what I chose to do, is that now you can't run away from yourself. You know, you could again, try to distract yourself, go play games, go play whatever, get involved in gangs, do, you know, you could just find a million ways to distract yourself. You would be surprised how good we are at doing that. But it is much easier, I think, because you're not plugged into the internet. You're not, there's not the mall just waiting for you to go distract yourself or to go shopping at the local stores or to just be around people constantly or to just be on the internet or Netflix or whatever. You know, you have to just learn to read books or write or draw or like pray. I mean, people, that's why people get into religion. It's this space where you have to do something with your time, you know, work out, whatever. People get really buff because they put their energy into that. I really chose to just write. I would spend a lot of time at my bunk just writing, reading books that I could get my hands on, meditating, getting to know some other people, you know, and it completely changed my life. I mean, I like to say that there's three things that really set me on the path that I am on today here in 2021 at 36 years old and now sober off crystal meth and crazy stuff like that for a long time. That the first thing was taking acid, LSD, which I still highly recommend done in the right setting that can lead to lots of powerful insights into your mind, and mushrooms. So psychedelics, like that was a big eye opener for me even before I got locked up, and then getting locked up, going to prison. And then through that, through both of those things, because I started meditating originally after taking acid. And then when I went to prison, I really started meditating. Those three things, but then also my next story that I'm about to share on solitude was kind of the third thing. But those experiences, so trying psychedelic, exploring my mind, which I think is part of the journey for me, not for everybody, getting locked up and then having to face myself and look at my trauma and really ask some of these hard questions about what I was doing, what direction I was going on, and really look at my relationship with my father and say, well, why? What am I trying to run from? Why was I using drugs so heavily and what was I trying to avoid? Because that's what it was. It was self-medication and avoidance for me. And so that my point is that that space really gave me that opportunity for growth. And one other thing I'll say on that is I remember like I wasn't happy. It wasn't like when I was addicted to drugs, I was like really like, I need drugs. I was miserable. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Other people who were using drugs that with me were telling me I seemed miserable. I mean, I was all messed up. And I remember like a week, 2 weeks before I got arrested, I was staying at my mom's house. I'd gone back to my mother's house after being kicked out because of drugs. And told them like, I'm sober now. I want to be sober. Please just let me come home. And so they let me come home, but I still was just all messed up on the head from just using so many crazy drugs over the last 2 years. And I remember my mom found me like in the closet of the room I was staying at her house. And I was just like on my knees, just kind of crying, sitting in the closet. She's like, what is going on? How can I help you? And I was just like, everything is going too fast. Like, I just need things to slow down. Like, I remember telling her, like, I needed a pause. I needed things to just pause so that I could just catch my breath and, you know, figure out what the heck was going on. And I got that pause. I got to go to prison, and it wasn't the way I was hoping or asking or wanting at all, but I chose to take advantage of it, and it really did change my life. So I'll read one other section here from her, and then we'll go to the second story, which is the third thing that I feel like has really shifted my life. In the years following my incarceration, I guess this kind of leads into it, so we'll just go with this. In the years following my incarceration, I struggled to stay connected to that feeling of pure being, of truly existing in the moment and accepting that I could not control the outside world. The best I could do was to work on my spirit. When I would slip up, I'd pick myself back up. Eventually, I found myself released from parole and creating a new life with a new passion for knowledge and community. In 2011, I decided, so this was like when I started to wake up politically. I woke up spiritually first in prison, then afterwards started questioning the world, started the Houston Freethinkers in 2010. And then that whole time I wanted to like figure out how I could be really free. You know, when I was locked up, I kept thinking like, okay, when this is all over and done, like, what am I going to do to really celebrate being free? I have friends who are train hoppers. I got friends who, you know, hitchhike. I got friends who travel in their cars and stuff like that. I didn't have a vehicle at the time getting out. I'd hitchhiked before a few times, but it wasn't really what I was looking for. And I have friends who've train hopped who are missing legs. So I was like, nah, I would love to do that and still would one day, but maybe not yet. And around the time I was moving into the city of Houston, and I just started biking everywhere I could go, fell in love with that, and basically just decided I'm going to do a bike tour. And I went on a bike tour January 2011. It's actually been 10 years. It's freaking crazy. 10 years since this amazing experience, which is the third thing I say that really shifted my life. And again, this is another experience with solitude. So I want to share this one briefly, and then we'll start to wrap up here, because this video is titled Solitude as a Gateway to Freedom. And what I'm trying to kind of hammer home here is that it is valuable, guys, to spend time by ourselves with our own hearts and minds, because the whole idea of the conscious resistance, the message is that once we really know ourselves, truly know ourselves mentally, physically, spiritually, then I believe it is impossible for the state, for corporations, for other external entities to control us, to propagandize us, and to get inside this most important real estate in our mind, our headspace here, and to manipulate us. But you have to know who you are. You got to work on your inner child and heal your trauma. You got to be able to be as strong mentally and physically, mentally and spiritually, as much as you are also trying physically. Some people, it's like this, like it kind of relates to being locked up, right? I remember there was this old school dude who was in and out of prison. You could tell he was like it was his thing, right? He liked going in and out of prison, I guess. And he was kind of a buff older dude. He had like, you know, gray beard and stuff, but he was buff. But he was really adamant about like, you got to work out your legs, because he's like, so many people come into jail and they just focus on working out their chest and their arms, and they get all buff. And he's like, then they got these little tiny legs, right? They're super underdeveloped. And so he was always just telling people like, you know, do these leg exercises. So if you think about your mental, physical, and spiritual health in the same way, a lot of us were focused so much on the physical. Like, yeah, we're doing the bench press, and we're lifting weights and building up our chest and our arms, which in this case could be taking care of the physical. Like, you're afraid of cyber polygons, so you're taking care of the physical. You got backed up supply of food, you got solar, you got, you know, water stored. All those things are important, right? But you don't want to walk around with tiny legs either. And your tiny legs are your spiritual and mental growth, right? So we just need all of that. We need the holistic approach, which is why in this book, we also talk about holistic activism or holistic anarchism, because it's a full picture. Yes, we need to expose the people in power. Yes, we need to expose these dark things that they're up to as well. But we really can't heal as people if we're not focused on our mental and spiritual and psychological health as well. So yes, work on the physical health, physical preparedness, but also be spiritually, mentally prepared for all these things that are coming. And I find that one of the best ways to do that is to work on your own shit, to heal yourself, and to, you know, work through the stuff that you have, that each of us have. So being alone, giving yourself time for that is a big valuable part of that. And for me, I did that by taking a bicycle tour. So I'm going to read a little more from the book that talks about that. In 2011, I decided to complete my journey and celebrate my newfound sense of freedom by taking a cross-country bicycle tour. I had long been plotting an adventure that would give me the ultimate sense of a restriction-free lifestyle and the wonder that comes with the open road. I took my bike, some books, and some supplies and traveled across Texas and into New Mexico. For 3 months, I camped, rode, and volunteered on farms. It was during this time that I once again found myself humbled by the lessons that came my way. I met many beautiful people, each of whom imparted a bit of their own experience to me. I slept under more stars than I'd ever seen, howling along with the coyotes and laughing at how dirty but free I was. In those 3 months, I laughed, I cried, I challenged myself like never before, and I decided to see every part of the journey as a magnificent piece of the puzzle waiting for me to put it together. I remembered the peace that I had found while behind razor wire and recognized that how isolation had allowed my mind to receive clarity and be washed clean. It was these two experiences that have played the most significant role in my awakening and growth. When given the time with my own mind, whether by force or choice, I began to understand my fears and my hopes. I saw my failures and witnessed the destructive nature of my past actions. I had a vision of a crossroads, a divided road. One way would take me further into darkness, and the other could be the journey of a lifetime. I pondered long and hard, asking myself what it is about these two unique experiences that sparked a quest within. I have found that I, like most people, was living a busy life cluttered with plenty of ways to ignore myself and slap on a facade of joy and happiness. I found that I have been doing anything and everything possible to avoid sitting down for 5 minutes and communicating with my own mind. I had lost touch with whom I identified as myself. In the process, I had lost the connection with my own humanity and heart. By having no other option but to sit in a prison bed or in an isolated back road on my bike, I had an opportunity to understand my deepest pains and to begin healing them. It is this healing that will help bring our species back in alignment with the planet and its inhabitants. Boom. So that's chapter 8 of the Conscious Resistance Trilogy. There's more to that. I don't want to kind of read the whole chapter, but yeah, I just wanted to share those two stories. Again, going to prison, choosing to take a bike tour on the road and spend a lot of time by myself in and around those times. And I should say that when I came back from that bike tour, which was the middle of March 2011, I was just like alive. I was on fire. I remember I was just like, so I feel like now that's just the norm for me, but I remember how it was like a clear shift where I was just like, oh my God, there's so much beauty in life and there's so much potential and we can do this. We can do this. I had started to wake up the year before and I was freaking out. Like the police state is coming. Oh my God. I was listening to too much Alex Jones at the time. And it's like, it's about to happen. It's about to happen. And I went on the road and I had people pulling over while I was on my bike tour. Like, you know, random people like, hey, you need a lift to the next town? It's like, sure. And then we'd get to talking and, you know, they would just be amazing people. And I remember this one, I have a notebook saved somewhere that has all these stories. And there was a couple that just pulled me over and like, you know, just talked, what can we pray with you? It's like, that's all they wanted to do is just stop to like pray with me. And 10 years ago, I definitely was just starting my spiritual journey. And I was, you know, if you had asked me 15 years ago, I would say, keep your prayers away from me. But at this time I was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do that. Pray with me. That's cool. I'm down with that. And it was just such a beautiful time. And I felt like it was exactly what I needed because I had started to wake up spiritually in prison. Then I got out and I started to wake up to the political, you know, conspiracy world. And then I went on the road and it was like, I needed to be reminded that this was real, that there were good people out there. And that's what I found. I found like everywhere on the road, just good people. And it was beautiful. The last thing I want to say on solitude that is mentioned briefly in this book is that in some of our native indigenous traditions around the world, there is often what are referred to as rites of vigil or vision quests more commonly. And there's other better, more specific terms for them, but generally that's kind of a catch-all term. And it is a part of different traditions. I know that in the Choctaw tradition and Lakota, before sun dancing, for example, which just happened in the solstice this year, which is one of our biggest ceremonies, our biggest traditions, that there is a period where people will go out and they'll fast and they will spend time alone. You know, you might be fasting and only having water or some, depending on the tribe and the situation, no food, no water for 4 days. And you might be out in the wilderness I don't want to get into the details, but you basically would go out into the wilderness, right? And spend 3 or 4 days in the elements in prayer. And you're fasting, you're giving something up, and this is preparing for other bigger ceremonies. So I feel that there is a historical and spiritual precedent for the idea of us spending time alone. And even like meditation, like I like to tell people, I definitely don't sit down in Zazen, you know, full lotus style and meditate as often as I would like to or as often as I used to. But I do find time to be with myself. I find time to be with my mind. I find time every night as I'm laying in bed and I put on my little eye covers to help me sleep. I just lay there and I pray and I think, I give thanks and I think of my day. And, you know, some of it's just reflection, but that is so important, guys. Even just, find your favorite chair, find your favorite little room, and spend 5 minutes alone in the beginning of your day or the end of your day or both if you can afford it. And I promise you that state of reflection will help you in so many different ways. For me, especially writing them down, writing those reflections, it can help you think, oh yeah, I had that conversation with somebody earlier. I want to get back with them. Or, oh yeah, I saw this beautiful thing today and it totally just struck me in this way. Let me reflect on that for a moment. You know, just really being able to be thankful for the things that we have. That is what's possible in solitude. And also, again, in solitude, that is where we can find our healing. Sometimes the healing comes from community, but often I find that the journey has to begin with just you, just yourself, right? Because you can do it in group therapy sessions. Those are great. And group meditations and healing sessions and all that good stuff. You know, men's circles, women's circles, what have you. But I do think it is important for us to make sure we are finding that time alone, especially because of the busy world we're living in, especially because of the distractions that surround us and how easy it is to ignore ourselves and ignore what we're feeling. And yeah, I just wanted to check in with you guys. And if you enjoyed this, please do check out that essay. It is listed in the video you're watching. Look in the description below. It's a preview essay for chapter 8 of this book. Again, this is the Conscious Resistance Trilogy. You can, I'll tell you this. So each of these three books, which within this Conscious Resistance Trilogy, there's Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality, Finding Freedom in an Age of Confusion, and then Manifesto of the Free Humans. You can download the individual books, the PDFs, for free on my website. Go to the books tab. But this new updated all-in-one book, which does have new essays, is only available in the book because it's through our publisher. I got a publisher now, Discovery Publisher. And they are now translating this to French and Spanish as well. So I'm really excited. So over the next 10 weeks or so, every Friday or Saturday, I'm going to be going over different chapters in this book. And I invite you to join me and follow along. And until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your attention. Remember, we are powerful, we are beautiful, and we are free. Peace.
This is Derek Bros. Derek Bros. Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries, Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. We've all stayed alive. You have no idea.